We're starting with Coach Andrew Nyloka, former Hardin Simmons Cowboy, our first. So we're excited to have him here because his insight is specific to us. But if you're someone else listening, definitely could help you as well. A lot of connections through the Hardin Simmons community, which maybe we'll get to Colton Rossu as well because we're connected. I came in and know him, and he's at the school that I used to be at. So a lot of connections. Excited to start the conversation. And this episode, we're literally going around the table with questions. If you listen to the past, you kind of know how it works. Some of it nuts and bolts, some of it intern related. So on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Brock, and we'll start firing away.
Sure.
So you're a big data guy. I've listened to a couple of your podcasts. And you talk about wearing the cave vest and, you know, how you really are big on their swing mechanics. Is that something you've kind of picked up? Like, when did you first realize you're like, sports science is kind of what I want to do rather than, you know, lean into more of just the old, just getting after in the weight room and especially baseball specific?
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't say, yeah, sports science. It's more of like better goal oriented training, right? At the end of the day, your main KPIs need to be showing up on the field. And you always see, especially in baseball, you'll have a guy that throws, say he throws 95. He's your freak in the weight room. He's 240 pounds, jumps up 40 inches, counter movement, 45 approach, like a 1-4 ACL, just your absolute wagon, right? All around freak, right? Those are your weight room guys that you're probably as a strength coach you're going to love. And then you go out and then you got the 165 pound dude that throws 95 as well. That's gets buried from a front squat at 185 or 225. And then it makes you kind of consider like, well, what are the underlying outputs outside of skill acquisition that is preventing this guy to succeed at a really high level? Because you got two different unicorns, both of them are achieving the same output. So now it's trying to find the underlying and the lowest hanging fruit. And I used to be really big into nothing wrong with these methods or modalities. Like, I lived and breathe it. The TPI by Titleist, FRC, used to live and breathe FRC stuff. But I really started to hone in on skill acquisition in relationship to pressurization. So that's probably about, I'm sure y'all have heard of narrow and wide ISAs or similar concepts to it. I started going down the Bill Hartman. Have you heard of Bill Hartman?
I have not.
He's basically the leader. Some people call him the Messiah. He developed the Unified Health Performance Model, UHP Plus. He changed my lens in relationship to pressurization and biomechanics and learning to understand everything through gait. And that really helped me open up the lens in relationship to skill acquisition, because you can now understand why a lateral tilt on somebody's first move on the mound kind of happens, and why somebody rolls onto their fifth met at peak leg lift on the mound, right? And then so now that first setup has thrown a wrench in the whole sequencing aspect, and because of that he got pushed super far forward. He's starting to ride down the mound. He has to pull really hard on his left side in order to get his arm to go full extension, right? And some guys succeed at that. Some guys throw 90 plus. But it's how efficient you can make the system before you start adding horsepower, right? And then it's also understanding if you got a guy who throws 80 miles an hour, who's 165 pounds, and their relative motions are okay, then it's like, okay, maybe the lowest hanging fruit is stacking a little bit of horsepower. It's really just a bigger understanding of movement, right? So everybody's like, I'm a Zach Decken guy. Like, that was my first college internship, movement over maxes. It's a deeper dive of movement over maxes. It's understanding the pelvis, how it orientates and how it pressurizes through space when you're walking, when you're going through gait, and understanding what movements are in relationship to the weight room that represents gait, and then trying to push people's center of gravities in order for them to achieve their skill. And the reason why I got big into the sports science stuff is that the sports science stuff. I say sports science, data stuff, or anything you track data, gave me a better understanding on why my old mentalities weren't working. So it's like everybody talks about achieving a stack in one, the weight room, but two, also on the baseball field, right? Because you have to achieve the stack in order to have a holistic turn. So there's actually fake stacks. You can actually compress somebody anteriorly so hard to where you pull their bottom rib cage down and then they become super 4 foot heavy. So that it looks like the illusion of achieving a stack, but in reality, they aren't able to pressurize their inner rear heel and their calcaneus is stuck in an ER like position. And then those guys say, if they're a hitter, they're going to struggle with the inner half. And the reason I say is because this is also me in college. I was a big right field, right center gap guy. But he threw me inner half, I'll get absolutely blown up by doors. And I'll have a topspin ground ball in the sixth hole if I barreled it well. But in reality, I just had a really strong rectus strategy and I was pulled down from my bottom rib cage and I couldn't create space backwards and I couldn't access my posterior outlet. But you can also see it on force plates, and then K-vest is really big because you can't hide from K-vest. You can hide from blast. I think it's called swing acceleration or accelerate. Yeah, I think it's called swing acceleration or acceleration. Something has a very high correlation to sequencing, but it can be cheated to where on the K-vest it's not. So we actually did, during my time at Oral Roberts, we had guys swinging on K-vest and blast motion to where it's like guys with really good swing acceleration sometimes had absolute dog water sequencing in the box. So it's trying to pull apart different aspects and really find out what's going on within the system. I used to utilize a lot of FRC principles in relationship to, oh yeah, this guy just needs more internal rotation. I'm going to pale and rail and car this guy to death. In reality, I wasn't acknowledging the feet, or I wasn't acknowledging the front portion of the rib cage in order to achieve a true holistic stack. If that makes sense. I know that was kind of dense.
Let me ask, because this is great, and I'm asking for a friend. Start from the top. Someone might be listening. What's a K-vest? Talk to me about a K-vest.
So a K-vest is basically, it's a sensor that shows how well you can sequence. So you got a belt on, you got almost like a sports bra looking thing on. It has a sensor on the lead arm, sensor on your spine, a sensor on your pelvis, and a sensor on your hands. And it shows you the order and then the degrees of velocity on how fast somebody's sequencing. So it's a four-step process. Ideally, in a perfect world, the pelvis is going to lead, T-spine leads, lead shoulder leads, or excuse me, pelvis goes first, spine goes second, lead shoulder goes third, hands go fourth. And then in that, you get to look at it from a 3D motion to where it's like, hey, your negative move, if this guy does a negative move and he has a pelvis orientation like this, that tells me he's lost his stack somewhere throughout that space. So therefore, the sequencing is going to go off. So maybe his T-spine is one that initiates the rotation rather than the pelvis. So this guy's actually rotating like this rather than like a true holistic turn. And those are those guys that are going to have a higher exit velos and have a higher probability of covering a whole play, if that makes sense.
How much does the K-vest run you?
That's a good question. I've never looked that up. That's comes out of baseball's budget.
They didn't have any Harden Simmons when you played here, did they?
They did not. We had Blast, and I think we only had two of them.
Okay. Could you use them with a discus thrower? Would there be benefit in that as well?
For sure. I know they use them in golf. I want to say they use them in javelin, and I wouldn't be surprised if they use them in disc.
Okay.
I've never ventured out the disc, but I've seen, there's this guy, I think on social media, his name's Cade something. He's behind the javelin anatomy stuff. I think I've seen him throw K-vest on there a little bit, but I'd imagine their metrics will be a little bit different.
Okay.
I know it's bigger than the golf though.
Okay. I learned something. I mean, my friend learned something. That's good information. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Sorry to talk back to you. We started out with K-vest, and you talked about it being dense, and I'm writing down what is K-vest. All right. Sorry, Brock.
So in one of your podcasts, you mentioned it being either an engine issue or the driver. You've kind of touched on that, you know, learning mechanics wise. How do you determine that weight room as in, or are you looking for that more success on the field, or are you looking at it from, okay, his lift is this, how can we translate to that field, or he's not performing the best on the field, where can we go back and see if that's on them, or is that something we're programming, or as you would be programming?
For sure. So moral of the story, is it an engine issue or is it a driver issue? Is that your question?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So engine issue or driver issue, I think of a driver as almost like, I call it hardware and software. What is hardware? Hardware is center of gravity and anthropology. Where is my hips through space? Where is my center of gravity through space? And am I operating within my base of support? If we're operating outside of our base of support, once you develop an eye for it, you'll see, start seeing some crazy bends within the system. What I mean by that is, like, I think about four guys right now who have, especially on their rear leg, their shins look like bananas. It's literally bent out to the side. They have a lot of concentric orientation and concentric activity on the medial aspect of their shin and their femurs, right? With the co-product of that, their first met isn't able to get to extension. So in reality, their center of gravity is forward in front of them, and their first met's actually already extended while standing. So their foot's already supinated, it's not pronated. So if it's already supinated, I call this late, in late stance, think of toe off and sprinting or whatever. They're actually already at toe off while standing through gravity. So they're not going to be able to get to stance leg or early leg. And so therefore their whole rod side has become ER orientated to where it becomes a bend. I need to fix that in order to have a more organic and holistic output driven human being. So that's where the engine becomes in. It's like I could throw this guy in a squat rack. I can have him go split squats, do all these crazy rotations, have him front squat and bench press and all that stuff. But in reality, all I am doing is increasing horsepower on a car that's rear axles and front axles are messed up and it has three flat tires. Yes, I might improve some exit velos. Yes, I might improve his velo on the mound and he might become so-called a better athlete, but I decrease this guy's shelf life. What I mean by decrease this guy's shelf life is, like, how long is the habitat and the environment I just created for this individual before something bad happens? Bad happening could be tomorrow. Bad happening could be in next year, 2 years. But it's understanding what you're doing through training. And it's also understanding the individual. Like, for example, last year at Oral Roberts, I call them my horsemen. Horsemen, what is horsemen? Horsemen are guys that if they're not on the field, our winning percentages go down. So it's like at Oral Roberts, it was three pitchers and then one catcher. Like, if we didn't have those three guys in our bullpen, we didn't have our main closer that throws, I don't know, 95 to 97. Then we didn't have our relief pitcher that throws 92 with 20 inches of vert, which looks like 97. And then we didn't have our other reliever that's like 90 from like off the mound, his hands on the dirt, right? And then we had a catcher who simply wasn't surviving the environment, and I didn't think he was going to last throughout the season. All these guys had different outputs, but my goal for them, because of the straight off of output and how they moved biomechanically, they're already toward the end. I call them end game. They're already back in toward the end game of their shelf life, because their body started, every time these guys threw, it felt like a truck hit them and their outputs were through the roof. One guy was 175 pounds. One guy was 240. Other guy was 250. My heavy donkeys, my 250, 240 guys, they produced 10,000 watts on force plate. Right, which is a lot of watts. Like Ryan Helsley throws 104 and he produces 9,000. So these guys are freaks. I decided to not mind the output driven aspect. And I was like, I'm going to clean up these guys' turns and biomechanics in relationship to how stuff operates within their system. and not even worry about load or tonnage or anything in relationship to forks, plates, or how much weight's on the bar or anything in relationship to outputs. I did that for like 2.5 months. And we jumped on the force plate and our signatures were better. And our outputs, I think, had like a 4 or 3% decrement. All just from improving the driver of a hardware. And then software is like, just like anything. Hey, squat, hinge, push, pull, and all that good jazz. Rip throats out, do stuff really violent, chase athletic qualities. But understanding where your goal is at and understand what is the lowest hanging fruit for an individual. If I have a freshman that comes in with crazy bends, and I got 4 years with this guy,
yeah,
I probably need to clean up those bends before he blows up on year three when it matters. Because let's be honest, is our freshman going to start for us? Probably not. Now, we also have a freshman here that was like 95. He might start for us, but his bends aren't that crazy. Now, if I had a fifth-year guy or a transfer that's a junior that has maybe a little bit of bending-like stuff happening, maybe I'm just going to drive a little bit of horsepower into him and chase that. Because at the end of the day, we need to go out there and win, right? I need to make sure they're available on the field. I need to not be negligent, make sure I sprint all these guys and make sure I prep them for the demands of the sport. But it's just a better understanding of like what I said earlier. It's like it's a deeper understanding of goals. What is my goal? Do I need to prep this guy for the environment, or do I need to prep this guy to survive the environment for a longer period of time? It's, and then where are they at in relationship to our lineup, and then where are they at in relationship to the mound? Are these guys going to get a lot of innings because we rely on them heavy? Is this a guy, one of our 8 starters on the field that's going to start damn near every game? Right. So it's understanding that and breaking it down and figuring out what your true KPIs are.
So that's a lot of data for you to be looking at. Do you have assistants, interns helping you at Oral Roberts maybe, or do you have that still at State and where they're under you?
Here, I don't have anybody right now. At Oral Roberts, I had a GA. He was basically my sidekick. He would do all my data. And I would have interns that will help with the data and I would kind of look at it. A lot of the data was like just the monotony based stuff. I think it's a big learning curve in relationship to GAs and interns. Is like, hey, also Zach Deccan made me do this and I think he does a really good job on everything. So I'm gonna probably make that. is like, hey, go clean my data. And then when you're done cleaning my data, give me the data so I can look at it and make the adjustments. Cause at the end of the day, no matter what you're doing, if it's GPS, force plates, and if you don't do it at a high level, it's going to take up probably about 4 hours of your day. If I'm trying to run the model that I want to run currently, I don't have time to do 4 hours. I need to go spend my 4 hours doing something else, which is programming, analyzing, and looking at skill acquisition to go help improve skill acquisition. But where I do think is really beneficial of logging your own data is starting to notice trends. That's why I also give it to my GAs and interns, because it was like, we track damn near everything when we start getting toward the output orientation of training process, where it's like our guys are jumping on the jump mat, different variations of jumps. Guys are ripping stuff on Kaisers. Guys are doing stuff on crane scales. Guys are doing stuff with VBT, and everything is tracked and everything is logged. It's cool. It's like when you do it yourself, you can tell when team practices start. You can tell when inner squads start. You can tell when the guys went out that night. You can tell when your training is starting to stress the system and everything's starting to have 5 to 10% decrements. You can tell when you need deload. You can tell, you like, it's a pretty cool process. Now, once you've done that for X amount of time, and once you've honed in on your programming and understanding the stressfulness of your programming, you begin to understand when you can press the gas and when you can hit the brakes in order to cause an adaptation or maladaptation. I think my biggest learning curve is that, like, I used to see decrements and being like, I used to read the Cal Dietz old stuff all the time, to where it's like, oh yeah, stress, make the immune system sick. You're taxing the nervous system, keep hitting the gas. All of a sudden you have a super comp, create an adaptation, now pull the brakes and you get a super comp, and an adaptation from that. What I failed when I was younger is that I kept pressing. I eventually created maladaptations, right? Guys started blowing up a little bit. And I was like, oh, maybe I pressed too hard. But I would have never learned that learning curve if I never clacked it and analyzed my own data. So that's why I think that's very viable and it's very important to do as a young strength coach, as a GA and an intern, because data is the story of your application of your methods and your modalities, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now I have one more and then I'll pass it on to Ashley.
Sure.
So you've been with baseball for a while. You did a couple of sports. Why? Yeah, I know you're a former baseball player, but what kind of drove you towards choosing baseball? Because, I mean, you're doing pretty well for yourself now that you're state, you've been at Oral Roberts, also good baseball programs. And is that just something you fell in love with from college years? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in a baseball household. I lived and breathed it. If you look back on my college career, if you look my name up, I don't have very many stats, right? It's because I was hurt the whole time because I was spending so much time with Shelby. I was humble brag. I was probably the biggest, baddest, fastest dude on the baseball team. I remember Cade, the old strength coach, used to be there.
Cade Cole.
He asked me one time if I wanted to play football. And I was like, nah, dude, I played a little bit of football in high school. I was like, I'm not about it. I'm kind of soft. yeah, I just kept blowing up, and I was the biggest, baddest, fastest dude. I never understood why. And then I actually wanted to be a PT, and I did some shadowing at a PT down in Fort Worth, and it wasn't for me, right? Then I started dabbling in the strength world. I picked Coach Cole's brain a little bit. I never interned with him, but he was honestly my first strength mentor. And then I kind of just got in the game because of it. And I was a big hitting guy and I was a big analytical hitting guy. And then I loved the weight room. I just always knew I wanted to be a baseball guy. And so just blossomed into that.
Was that intentional then when you interned at TCU? Was that because you want to learn from Zach, or had you interned for someone different? Maybe your path would have gone a different direction.
That's a good question. I really didn't know who Zach was until I interned underneath Zach, if I'm gonna be honest. Because I was bouncing in between, because I actually asked Coach Cole, this was like, should I go to TCU or should I go to A&M? And he was like, if you want to do baseball, I'll go to TCU. And I was like, oh yeah, I like baseball. So I went there. But before that, it was actually funny, is that I applied to that TCU internship like 2 weeks before it started. But before that, I was at MJP and I was at APEC. And I actually had an opportunity to be the first strength guy at McCook Junior College down in Nebraska, I want to say. I can't remember. I want to say Nebraska. But COVID happened and that canceled all that out. And that was a massive blessing in disguise, because if I would have done that, I would have gotten absolutely baptized and I probably wouldn't have survived. And I would have probably quit and gone and climbed poles for my dad for an electrical company. But didn't do that. I actually DM'd Zach because I emailed him twice. And he didn't respond. And I DM'd him on Instagram. He responded in 5 minutes. I still hold that over his head. I was like, hey, remember when I emailed you twice and you didn't respond? And you responded to me within like 2 to 5 minutes on Instagram. And he was laughing. He's like, yeah. But ended up interning underneath him, and I remember the first day he pulled me into the office, and he was like, hey, I usually don't hire people this late, but I really just want to know what APEC and MJP did. And I sat in his office for probably about 3-4 hours just laying out the entire blueprints of MJP and APEC. And ever since then, I just kind of took off.
Yeah, I mean, that was 5 years ago, right? That wasn't that long ago. You're going at 2.0 speed in your career, which is awesome. And I love it because it's always a testament. You can go to Harden Simmons and, you know, do anything you want from here. It doesn't matter the division school you played at once you start coaching.
For sure. Not even coaching, man. Like, I know some really good D2, D3 coaches. You yourself, I've heard you before you even reached out. And then Michael Gregg over there at Harding.
Yeah, he does a great job.
He's a good dude. There's a lot of really good coaching. The classification doesn't matter. Like, I know some strength coaches at schools that are big time schools, and it's just like I expected more sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
but it's nowhere. A coach is a coach, and he can coach anywhere. Like my GA ship, I did at Delta State in the sticks in Mississippi, and like we all we had was racks, zero tech. The tech was your eyes and your phone. But like, love the coach, learn to love the coach with a passion, and always be hungry and always trying to find a why, because there's the human body is way too dynamic for you to understand. I run into issues still, and like some people think I know a lot. The reality is like I guess, and sometimes I guess right. And if somebody speaks in absolutes, always be wary. There is no absolutes. The human body is way too dynamic, and it's way too complex.
That's a good point. Ashley?
My questions are more programming focused. First one is, do you train your pitchers differently than your hitters or position players, or is everybody doing the same thing and then they do their position focused outside of the weight room?
That's a good question. Right now, everybody kind of does these exact same thing in relationship to meat and potatoes. The only thing that gets specific is the human. For example, I got like 4 to 5 different squat variations going on. I got a safety squat bar, box squat, with some guys have chips underneath their heels. What I mean by chip, like literally like a 1.5 kilo just underneath the heel. So I have their pelvis not anteriorly orientated, sit on a box. I have other guys that do Zercher box squats with slants underneath their feet. I have other guys that go Zercher free squats. I have guys that go front squat with a ramp. I have guys go a Zercher with a cable assist, and I have guys doing TRX squats. It's all individualized in relationship to the prereqs of what they have in order to execute a certain movement. Same thing with RDLs, same thing with rows. We do individualized stuff at practice in relationship to foam rolling, in relationship to breathing work, and in relationship to, like, we haven't gotten to water bag stuff yet, but when we do get to water bag, it'll be individualized based off of that, and you can kind of say it's more position specific. At the end of the day, once you understand movement is gait and movement in the weight room is gait, and when you have certain people stuck in the late and stuck in the middle on different sides of their body, and say if I'm stuck in the late on my right rear sided hip, say I'm a right handed hitter, my right side is stuck in the late and it's anteriorly orientated and it's externally rotated. It's probably a really good idea to make sure that guy is able to delay and yield on his right side in order for him to coil. Because if not, his coil's fake. So that's probably a pretty big KPI on my end, and I need to clean that up. So weight room stuff is still going to stay pretty general. Dynam stuff in relationship to cage work and mound stuff is going to get a little more specific for that individual. I could have a very similar aspect to where it's like, say I had that exact same setup, but he's a left-handed pitcher. So his right side of his pelvis is anteriorly oriented, and now we're talking about lead late block. So now it's, I'd imagine this pitching coach probably is like, hey, I need you to have your lead late block not cut off your front side of your body. So say if I'm this way, lead leg's hitting here instead of here. He's closing himself off, and the pitching coach trying to fix, and he's driving his head up against the wall. He's like, well, damn, why can't I fix this guy? Well, in reality, there's bigger things at play in relationship to internal dynamics, and this guy just can't create a delay on his right side. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do very similar concepts, but my water bag work's going to be different because I'm trying to create a violent delay in order to buy this guy time to get over his lead leg. So to answer your question, yes and then no. It's always what's the human in front of you and what's going to have the biggest effect in relationship to skill. We're probably going to squat. We're probably going to hinge. We're probably going to row. We're probably going to do some sort of push. Now it's like, what are the pushes in relationship to the prereqs for the individual that they can actually train? It's like, here's another example on a row. Like, I had a guy do a low cable row today because he lacks shoulder flexion. He only has 20 degrees of shoulder flexion in relationship to the Hartman's model. He probably can't do a row that's perpendicular to his body. If not, his shoulders don't anteriorly orientate, scap's going to roll up in front, it's going to get really shrugging, it's going to curl it. You're not training a lat. So we need to put an exercise in here where it's actually trains the lat to decelerate the humerus, right? So it's learning to pick exercises that fix the individual based off the prereqs that they have. and then go do your skill specific stuff at practice.
Do you bench press or overhead press your athletes? And if so, what's the difference in off season versus in season?
Yeah, we bench press. I don't have any overhead presses right now, simply because I don't have time for it. Time is money. It's always a race against time, especially in a strength coach world. I mean, I'm sure y'all have already been exposed to it. Sometimes you get 30 minutes to lift. Sometimes you have 45 minutes to lift. I'm going to go hit my biggest meat and potatoes that I know is going to create a change. Right now, I have some guys doing push-ups, feet on the wall push-ups with hand elevation so they can hold a stack. Some guys don't need that because they have a decent excursion. So they go slightly feet elevated dumbbell bench. With my group right now, I don't have anybody dumbbell benching. I don't have anybody landmining right now. But it's also my fourth week here. So I got here kind of late. So I kind of had to scrap everything, if I'm going to be honest, that we were doing and make it mine. At Oral Roberts, I did have people landmining. I did have people throwing landmines. I did have people bench pressing. I mean, I'm sure y'all saw some stuff on Instagram. Like, once we receive some excursion and have control through in space and pressurize, we get kind of rowdy with it. We get kind of fun with it. However, that is earned. Training is fun, but training fun is earned. Like, you see Patrick Mahomes doing all this crazy stuff, right? Yes, that's a 1% human being, but that guy also pressurizes really well and his body operates really well. I can't just throw a frag grenade in a wooden box and hope it sticks, right? You got to make sure the box sturdy, make sure it has compressurized, and make sure it does stuff well. If not, you're going to mess in the shelf life. In relationship to off season and end season, stuff really doesn't change for me. Like, I operate almost in an end season model all the time. Like, perfect example. We should be in the prime off season aspect right now, but we played an 18-inning inner squad this past Saturday. 18 innings, the boys got there at 10 a.m. and they didn't go home probably till 7 p.m. It's a lot of time on your feet. At Friday, we had a lighter practice. Thursday, we played a 9-inning game. That's probably more intensive than in season, but we're in the off season right now. So it's learning to plug and play, understand where athletes are. Like, I think it was Friday, I knew my guys were going to run it at a 19-inning inner squad, and I banged. I said banged. Bang, Coach Coleman used to say bang, actually, now I think about it. I banged a lot, like all of our sprint work, and we're still in the foundation aspects, but all we did was work on skill acquisition of RDLs and rows and of a squat, right? Now it's just like I toned down the intensity. I'm still don't hold on to my volume, but it's just playing with volume based off of intensity. So it's in season, and for me is, to be frank, is year round. I probably get about 4 to 5 weeks of true off season where there is no other stims outside of me, the boys going to class, and whatever weekend activities they do.
And then my last question I have is, what is one movement or lift you feel is a non-negotiable that every baseball player should be doing?
Dude, that's a good one. That's tough. The reason I say that is because I don't really believe in progression and regressions. I believe in a movement fits the athletes based off of prereqs. But you probably should be able to internally rotate on a leg. And in order to internally rotate on a leg, the prereq of that is achieving a posterior outlet. And if you achieve a posterior outlet, then that means your foot can pronate during an RDL. And that means your foot can pronate on a coil. If you can achieve a really good excursion of a squat at probably about 90 degrees, you probably can achieve that. But if you can't achieve that, I would say, dang, that's really tough. You're putting me on a spot right there.
We come back to it.
Sprint and jump. There you go. That's never going to leave my program, sprinting and jumping. Because if you're not sprinting and jumping, you're probably not going to survive practice. And if you're not surviving practice, then you're probably not going to play. Even if, here's a good example. Even if somebody has crazy bends and moves like absolute dog water, I need to prep them to practice. I need to prep hamstrings. I need to prep adductors. I need to prep hip flexors. I need to sprint and jump them, even though if they don't have excursion of pelvises, even though I know I'm adding interference of what I'm trying to achieve, I'm always going to do it because I understand the importance of it. Because the last thing I need is an adductor strain or a hamstring strain mid off season or mid season, because I was negligent and I let my ego get in the way because I was trying to have this guy turn super holistic so I can drive up exit velos or throwing velos or whatnot. I hope that answered your question. That almost got really sloppy.
So I got more just intern style questions. My first one being, what are some CSCS study tips?
If I'm being honest, if I was to take that test right now, I'd probably fail. CSC, there's a guy. I think his name's something Castro. Mike Castro. He has like a CSCS prep. I think it's like $200 or something like that. But that's what I paid for and I took, and that guy teaches it like a kindergartner. I would watch his videos. I would read the chapter, then go watch the videos again. I think his name's Mike Castro, now I think about it. Really good dude. Like I said, breaks everything down to like a super basic kindergartner level. And that's honestly how I passed. I mentioned earlier to where I was like, I had the McCook junior college opportunity. If I didn't pass that test, I didn't have a job. So I approached it like this is me burning the boats. I have to burn the boats or I don't have a job. So I went balls to the wall. I studied for like 10 hours a day. I was like, I'm going to knock out three chapters. I'm going to go, if I only studied for 5 hours and I already knocked out those three chapters, I'm going to go back and reread and analyze those three chapters. And I'm going to make sure I handle it and make sure that I know it at like the back of my hand. At the end of the day, dude, it's a parking pass. It is literally a parking pass. To where it's like, hey, I got my credentials. Now I can train people. Like I said a second ago, like if I took that test right now, I can, if I was a betting man, which I'm not in Oklahoma anymore, so I'm not around casinos. But if I was a betting man, I would bet against myself that I would not pass that test. But I also feel like I'm pretty certified. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now I do think there needs to be a line to where it's like, hey, this individual needs to take a test, but that's not my job. That's NSCA's job. But yeah, that's my opinion on the test.
You've got it in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Oh, here's another tip. You don't have a calculator. So you got to learn how to learn long divide and multiply and all that stuff. However, I took my test like 7 years ago. So I'm not sure if they're allowed calculators now. I remember I was given a whiteboard or a white laminate piece of paper with a black erase marker. And I actually remember I studied how to long divide because I forgot what to do with the decimal when it's in the cave in the bear's cave, and I was like, damn, I forgot where I moved this.
I bet you've used that a bunch since then. You long divide a lot.
Oh yeah, now I just pull out my calculator. Yeah.
Next question: what did you take from Harden Simmons and bring to your, either from Cole or from baseball, and bring to your current position?
What did I bring from Harden Simmons? That's a good question. Be the same guy. Cole was always the same guy every single day. You couldn't tell. I remember there was a time football got home at like 4:30 a.m. and we had weights at like 5:30 or 5:45 on a Friday night. Because we always did 5:30s because I think Guitars and Cadillacs would do their thing on Thursdays. And so Coleman would always make us come in earlier on Fridays to make sure we didn't, you know, do college things on a Thursday night. But anyways, Cole came home at like 4 a.m. because of football. And then he was the same guy, brought the same energy at that 5:30 a.m. lift. But I also really enjoyed the weight room. And I also always made sure I remembered what it was like as an athlete to come and train during certain times. So I would take pride in my feel. What I mean by feel is like I was a meathead in college. Like I was the guy that would shotgun a bang, and I would stand by the near locker next to the door, and I was banging on the weight room door. I was that guy. Shelby probably remembers. They're like, yeah, Nila, like when I said, I'm sure she has some good stories and bad stories. Like Nila was a wildcat. What I mean by feel is like I was a meathead, but I also hated training after practice. And I also was a catcher. And so I try to, when I do train guys after practice, I try to get them in and out as fast as humanly possible. I'm like, hey, all you got today is you got some pelvis stuff and you got RDLs, you hit triceps and you get out of here. Like in and out as much as possible. I try to have feel in relationship to practice when we do practice dynams, because our dynams is training. It's like, hey, we're going to stack a brick because I'll get 20 minutes every day for a dynam, and I get it for six times a week. You do the math. It's quite a bit of minutes. You can stack some bricks there and that. But if I know the guys are gassed and they're tired, like we're going to do some feel good stuff. And it might absolutely throw a wrench in my program. And I'm like, well, damn, I was supposed to rip 75% hail and rails with hovers or something today, and that was a nice pretty progression in relationship to my model. But it's like, if I look at my guys, like they're trash and they don't want to do this x, y, and z, and me having that feel, like I'm gonna bang it and we're just gonna play some games and get the guys laughing so we can have a productive practice, rather than me putting my ego in the way. I'm like, dang, I was supposed to hit some hovers today, and I was supposed to hit some pails and rails or rails or whatever I was supposed to do, or axial rotations. But I like to think I brought that over in relationship to, I was very aware of what I felt like 7 years ago when I was playing in relationship to what I was training, and I really enjoyed the weight room. Now imagine somebody that doesn't enjoy the weight room. I hope that answered your question.
No, that's good insight.
Last question. It's a little bit of a personal one for you. What's your why?
It's a good one.
And we don't play around here on the chit chat, man. We bring.
Yeah. What is my why? It's in my family. I got a kiddo now. He's 16 months. That changed my perspective a lot. I actually almost got out of college realm. I almost went private with my buddy down in Push in Arizona. He's my why now, because there are some days. Eventually, that fuse runs out. I'll be honest. Eventually, some days that fuse runs out. I had my first time here the other day. I think it was, what's today? Today's Wednesday. Today's Tuesday. There you go. That should show you on like how things are going up here. I think it was last Friday where I rolled into work and I was like, wow, I really don't want to be here today. I'm gassed and work feels like work, but I got to be the same guy and I still got to show up and I still got to execute my really basic stuff at a really high level, because I know the end goal is always Omaha, right? But at the end of the day, Omaha, what is Omaha? Omaha gets me a bigger stipend. Omaha gets me a 10% of my salary. And that 10% of my salary is going to go to my kid in order to put in his trust fund, in order to do that, in order to go get him a college, right? But my why is my family. On top of that, it's I still enjoy training, and I still enjoy really seeing the effect, where it's like, if I fix this guy on the mound doing some stuff and they've noticed a difference and I have velo bumps. Like, you look at that picture, like, oh, shit, like, I felt that. And I was like, yeah, dude, that was smooth, that was easy, and that was buttery. Like, that's what gives me more sparks, and that's what keeps me driving in relationship to continuing my education in order to show up, read, study, analyze. And then I'm also enjoy puzzles. Like, when my stuff doesn't land and when my shit doesn't work, it kind of pisses me off, because I'm pretty prideful in what I do, to where it's like, why? Now let's go digging deeper. Why? Why didn't this land? Was my exercise prescription wrong? Did I not land the contacts of which I needed to land in order to create a change, in order to create a change in relationship to skill? So you can kind of say my why's all over the place, but some days it's not. Sometimes the passion's not there. Sometimes the fire's not there. And that's where what I said earlier. You got to be the same guy every day, because the athletes, especially when they get good, they'll see right through you. So there's a phrase out there where it's like high schoolers care about how cool you are, college guys care about how big you are, and then professionals care about what you know, right? As you climb the ranks, people will start seeing through that. Like, oh, yeah, who cares if this guy's funny? Who cares if this guy's jacked? If you're talking about professional, like, I care about what you know, and you got to be able to apply that at an everyday standard. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, sir.
Kaiser?
All right, mine are kind of one intern and one and kind of just, I guess they're both intern questions. What was the toughest challenge you faced maybe earlier in your career, interning, or even just your first full-time job? And how did you overcome that challenge?
Always find a way to learn. Always debunk your best work. Always try to find holes. Especially in this game, like, you know how competitive this game is. Like, you aren't in the game yet, or you are in the game, but like, how many GA spots are going to open up here pretty soon at the end of the semester? It's probably going to be about, well, 40 of them, 40 or 50. And there's probably about, I don't know, 500 interns that are going to try to land a GA spot. What's going to separate yourself? And then if you really want to make it in this field, you're going to have to, honestly, it's just like sport. You don't have to be better than everybody else. And then it's also, you have to be a really good person. Being, people look past, like, when I hire people, I call references, and I don't really care about X's and O's. The only questions I ask is, can this guy coach? Does he coach his ass off? And then secondly, can I spend 14 hours with this guy? Because at the end of the day, there's going to be days where I'm like sitting there and I got to be 14 hours with this cat. And if I feel like I got to put my head through a brick wall because this guy speaks another word, then it's like I'm going to lose my hair and I'm going to start graying. Which I already am losing my hair and I'm already graying, but I think it's because I wear too much hats and it's because I had a kid. But anyways, the other aspect of it was there's actually a time where I was jobless for about 3 or 4 months and I just trusted the process and I kept studying. I kept trying to improve myself and I was ripping every interview. And every interview I learned, that it's actually had Deccan call me one time, Zach. And he was like, hey, you need to stop being like so aggressive on your interviews. And he's like, and all this good jazz in relationship to understanding not everybody knows what you're talking about. You need to learn to dumb it down. So I actually tried to learn how to speak better. Like, I get really excited. I'm probably doing it right now. I get really excited where I talk really fast and do all this stuff, learning to slow myself down in relationship to stuff. So that was kind of a big hardship. The other big hardship was when I had a kid. So during my time at Missouri State, one of our assistants had a kid and I saw him slowly start fizzling away, right? A great dude, love the guy. He's actually owns his own private place down in Wisconsin, maybe, doing awesome. But when I had my kid, that was a big hit in relationship to sleep, right? You think you're tired right now, you don't have a single clue on what tired is until it's like mama bear is up there feeding him at every other hour, and then you got to go over there and help, and then you got a 6 a.m. lift, and you've only slept cumulatively 6 hours in 4 days. That is what tired is. And then your strength guide to where you're supposed to be not loud and rowdy, but you're supposed to operate at a certain way in order for a weight room to run efficient, right? Efficient and effective. But being that same guy every single day, because like I said, the moment you're not, your athletes will start seeing through you and you might start losing buy-in. And then buy-in is what makes stuff work, to be honest. But that was also a pretty big hardship. I think those are probably my biggest three hardships I've had to run into currently.
Well, I would like to tell you it gets easier with kids, but the problems just become more serious as they get older. So that's not encouraging, but it does get more fun, but yeah. It gets more serious as they get older.
Absolutely.
I'll wrap it up. These are some kind of, there's no particular order. They're kind of random. Kind of admin, you're head of Olympic, you've been there 4 weeks, man, just probably pure chaos of wrapping your head around the situation. You probably went in with the I got to get these five things done, whether it's hiring, firing, duties. Are you only baseball? Is that the only sport that you're in control?
Yes, sir. I have only baseball currently.
And then, but you're in charge. What's going on there? Like, if you walk in this role someday, these people in this room, they'll be in the same role you are. And time is of the essence, and there's not enough time in the day. What are you prioritizing right now that you've got to get done taking over as the head of Olympic?
For sure. First things first is meet with your staff. My staff members are a good amount, a little bit older than I am. And respecting that, and then respecting the relationship, the power of a relationship, understanding relationships are created based off of results, right? So it's like, for example, Brock reached out to me. He was probably wanting something in relationship to a result of in the relationship to this interview or this Zoom call, and that's going to be increase our relationship, or it's not going to increase our relationship based off of the result and the information I gave him. Right. The only way to figure that out is to talk to an individual more in order to understand them better, to actually understand the result better. So, and then your staff members is essentially your family. It's your work family, right? So you got to understand them really well. You got to understand what's going on, not going on, but how's home, how's work, what they like, what they don't like. And then it's like I said earlier, it's like they've been here longer than I have. So they understand the ins and outs. Right. I need to develop that trust and relationship to understand that they'll have my back and I'll have their back. After that, it's meeting with the sport coaches, understanding what they want from the department, what they like from the department, and what they don't like from the department. After that, it's developing the department, right? What does the internship stuff look like? How do we want to operate it? My goal, like always, is like anywhere I go, I want to eventually become a Mecca, right? Like if I see somebody with a reference of Clemson, TCU, Elon, UCLA, Harden Simmons. Those are probably going to go on the top of my list in relationship to those references. Like, hey, I know I'm getting a coach. I'm not only am I getting a coach, I'm getting a professional in this field. I know when I hire them or I know when I bring them on, I don't have to micromanage them. I don't have to hold their hand because they're going to operate at a certain level. I want to kind of make that here. So it's like, develop an internship curriculum, advertise it, show the products of what we're producing, bring it on GAs, and eventually making the Mecca to where it's like, hey, if you're operating at Texas State, you know if you're pulling somebody from Texas State, you're getting a professional in this field. And they're going to stack a brick in relationship to elevating your field. So it's the priorities is always understanding admin, understanding your sport coaches, and then understanding your staff.
Are you running about 50%, 50-50, what you love doing, the coaching, the program, and the skill acquisition, and the other 50% is what you get paid for, the non-fun stuff?
Yeah. If you may be honest, right now it's about 80-20. Okay. 80-20 in relationship to doing 80% is doing the non-fun stuff. 20% is the baseball stuff that I'm really passionate about, but it's like, I'm trying to flip a department, right? So it's like, I got to understand my staff. I got to understand the admin. I got to figure out where money's coming from, what the budget looks like. I got to do inventory checks. I need to make sure our weight room looks like a power four level. Like we're going to the PAC next year. Like that's a power five conference. Like I got to make sure stuff is operating at a high enough level for me to attract other individuals, right? And then it's investing into those individuals, right? This is the grass isn't always greener where over the hill, the grass is greener where you water it. And right now, a lot of my time is focused on watering the grass I am in and what I'm standing on. Like, I like to think I know baseball enough to where I can put it on the back burner right now because I need to develop this department. And like what I'm doing with guys right now, it's nothing crazy. It's what I've done before. It's not like I'm trying to recreate a wheel, because I've already ran into very similar issues. So it's like, I already have that blueprint rather than right now in relationship department, I'm trying to develop the blueprint.
And then you might look back and know the 20% of your day is the workout you enjoy the most, because you finally get to go outside, you get to go on the floor and do the things you almost look forward to it more. You get out of your office and do the fun stuff. Absolutely. A book. What's a book you recommend that we should be reading?
Book that you recommend that you should be reading. I'm always unbiased. My the pops, Zach Deccan. I'm moving over Max's good stuff. Joel Smith has one. It's called Speed or something. Speed Strength. That was a big one for me in relationship to turns, in relationship to how different archetypes and systems fluctuate through speed. Currently now, for the past like year and a half, all I kind of digest, or really 2 years, is Bill Hartman stuff. Because I think it's extremely powerful.
Sound like light reading, Phil Hartman's work. It doesn't sound, it would take a long time to read, reread, take notes.
For sure. He's not really a book. It's more of like, he has online courses, a free online course. You could take that and then you become a member of his site. But anything Louis Simmons. I'm a big West Side guy. I mean, I still rip West Side hats. I believe in the method. I believe in the modalities. I believe in the programming style of it. And now it's just like peeling back layers to understand what your actual goal is. But yeah, Zach Deccan, Movement Over Max's, Joel Smith's Speed Book, Speed Strength, and then anything West Side's always good, in my opinion.
And then the last one, a podcast besides Strength and Conditioning Intern Chit Chat that you would recommend.
Move the Needle's good. Joel's Just Fly performance is good. Ahead of the Curve, I think, is a baseball one that I listen to every now and then. So I think Eric Cressy's is good. Cressy Performance Podcast. There's another Australian guy I listen to every now and then. What's his name? Can't think of it off the top of my head, but that one's pretty good. I know Baseball Performance Summit has one now. If you're looking for baseball stuff, I think they just stick to baseball stuff. I know Les Bellman has one. I listen to him every now and then. But there's a lot of stuff out there. It's trying to find what fits your model, right? Everybody's model's different, and figuring out how it's going to efficiently fit in yours and create change in relationship to that.
Coach, man, that was awesome. That was a lot of great information. I know we grew from it, and I know you're busy, and I appreciate you carving time out to talk with current Cowboys and Cowgirls from a former Cowboy.